And welcome to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, host, and Phil Conlon is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
We are going to be in good company today. We're going to talk to Sid Ryan, former leader of the Ontario Federation of Labour. And he has an article, General Motors' Decision Isn't Just Business to Oshawa, It's Personal. And I believe he's on the line. Are you there, Sid?
I am indeed, Phil. How are you doing?
Good, and we're glad to be talking to you. This was published only a few days ago. There's a lot of good response. You have, by the way, a book coming out called A Grander Vision. It seems to me maybe we get a little taste of the grander vision in what you're writing in the Globe. Tell us about Oshawa, why it's personal to you, and then what you think of this problem.
Well, you know, as a 28-year-old, I ended up living in Oshawa for a relatively short period, for about a year or so, and then I moved into Whitby, which is next door. But I have so many friends, like hundreds of friends over in Oshawa. I've, all of my business that I do, my banking and doctors and so on. I played soccer in Oshawa. I ran for the NDP 3 or 4 times. So Oshawa is in my blood. Mm-hmm. And particularly since I've known so many people who've worked in the General Motors plant over the years, really good personal friends. So when I saw what happened, in terms of watched GM actually, morph into a shadow of its former self. There was 23,000 workers there when I moved into Oshawa first back in 1980. And today, there's basically 2,500. So you can see it's been dwindling down for many, many years. But to lose that footprint out of Oshawa is a huge blow to the community, particularly the spin-off side of it. When you think that every GM job on the line creates 7 spin-off jobs in the community. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of people working in feeder plants, mom-and-pop organizations, stores, shops, and so on, that completely and totally depend upon General Motors for their livelihood. Yeah. So it isn't just the 2,500 workers that will lose their job. They reckon it's about 23,000-24,000 all told in the Durham region will end up losing their jobs as well. So it's a major hit to the economy. But at this time of the year, I cannot help but think about, the workers, their families, their mortgages, their children, uprooting them from their schools. I mean, the impact from a human perspective is just enormous. And my heart goes out to these people at this time of the year.
Yeah, it's somehow so arrogant. And it's kind of like a double Grinch Christmas, right? They're telling them this Christmas they'll be out of a job next Christmas.
Yeah, it's almost callous. And then at the back of my mind, I'm also thinking, is this a bargaining ploy? Is this, out to soften up the 2,500 who are left, to blackmail governments into pumping all sorts of dollars into, into General Motors? You kind of wonder, because it's not basically an announcement to say we are closing the plant. It's basically a notice to say we're not going to give you another product beyond November of 2019. Yes. But does that mean they're leaving the door open a little bit, that if the union goes to the bargaining table, which they will be next year, that they will try and extract some other major concessions? Because they've already gotten 2-tier wages, 2-tier pension plans. The workers, the workforce today, some of them will leave if they do close the door. Some of them will leave with a decent defined benefit pension plan. But an awful lot of them won't. They'll have, crappy old defined contribution plans, which are nothing but glorified savings plans. And these new workers that are under that system, they'll only have a few years of seniority. So what they have to look forward to is minuscule. So you don't know whether it's a bargaining ploy or not. And it's why the union have to fight this thing tooth and nail. Like, they really have to fight for these jobs. And I'm not talking about fighting for subsidies for General Motors, because I think enough is enough of the subsidies of taxpayers' money going into saving, these jobs. there's other things we can be doing with our tax dollars in terms of the healthcare system and post-secondary education and social programs and childcare programs. I mean, that's what happens. We siphon money away from those social programs and those systems when we put money into profitable corporations.
Yeah. How about asking for some of that money back, which wasn't returned?
Well, there's about $4 billion that they were given in straight subsidies during the period when, in the recession of 2008, they gave them loan guarantees. So there's about $4 billion of that they've yet to recover. They gave them some stock, which, of course, the Ontario government and the federal government at the time, which is run by the Tories, they basically sold it back at a loss. So even though they bought all this stock from General Motors, they sold it off at a time when they actually lost money on the deal, instead of hanging on to it. But I guess the Tories just didn't want to be seen to be shareholders in General Motors. God forbid that they would ever nationalize that industry, right? And it looked like on paper that, in fact, he had nationalized a portion of General Motors. And they couldn't wait to get rid of their stock quickly enough to be able to get out from underneath the possibility, God forbid, that people might start to say, why don't we continue to nationalize that industry? Yeah. But by the way, I don't think that's such a bad idea. When you're looking into developing new cars into the future, electric cars, I don't see why the government could not, and with this new technology and this whole new system of transportation, why they could not own a portion or the majority share in that type of a new factory going forward.
Well, absolutely, particularly when Canadians are treated this way, right? The rationale would be we're going to guarantee there's going to be decent treatment of Canadian workers.
Well, not only that, too, you wouldn't be putting the subsidies in because you have to assume down the road that the it's going to be a profitable corporation. Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, this is not all that far-fetched when you see in the UK where Jeremy Corbyn is talking about nationalizing large portions of the transportation system, particularly as it pertains to trains.
Even Tories are asking, please give us back our old rail system.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, these ideas are people need to start taking a look and see, look, is the capitalist system, has it been working for us? And then you say, with respect to the auto industry, no, it has not. Because all the profits have gone south. Mm-hmm. The subsidies, we've been putting in these subsidies, by the way, not just during the time of the recession, but we've been putting them in for years and years and years. Every time Unifor goes to the bargaining table, part of their plan is to be shilling for the corporations, trying to get more taxpayers' dollars to be pumped into, whether it's Fiat Chrysler or whether it's Ford or whether it's into General Motors.
Yeah.
It's almost become part of the bargaining culture now where, you know, in return for being able to retain their jobs, we have to go to the government and ask the government to pay for these jobs, essentially, is what we're doing.
Yeah. We're speaking to Sid Ryan, former president of the OFL, and he's the author of a new book coming out, A Grander Vision. And you point out in your article, people ought not to, and I notice politicians are saying, well, what we're hearing from the union and the members in Oshawa is just rhetoric. But no, they've had some fights with General Motors, including a plant occupation not that many years ago.
They had a plant occupation, but they also had put a blockade on the head office in Oshawa. About 10 years ago or so, mm-hmm. the General Motors did exactly the same thing that they're doing right now. The old, at the time, the forerunner to Unifor was the CAW. CAW signed a collective agreement around the truck plant, and basically they said that they would not close the truck plant for the duration of the collective agreement, and I believe it was a four-year collective agreement. But about 3 weeks after they signed the collective agreement, General Motors announces the closure of the truck plant. Well, you can imagine the members that worked in the truck plant were outraged. So they basically initiated a blockade of the General Motors headquarters in Oshawa, mm-hmm. which lasted for about 12 days. Uh-huh. So no, we could get in, no, we could get out, that kind of a blockade. The company went to court, and a Whitby judge basically ended the blockade, but not before he said that the General Motors came to the court with dirty hands and that they tried to pull a fast one on the union. So then the union, I guess, used that to go out and negotiate very lucrative severance packages. I think it was about $120,000 per employee. Mm-hmm. And for those who were not eligible because of their juniority, they negotiated there'd be more products that go into the auto plan, the car plan,
mm-hmm.
and they would essentially take up the slack of the workers that yeah. didn't get buyout packages, and they would continue to have a job.
Yeah.
So General Motors have a history of doing what yeah. you just did here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and by the way, and the OSHA workers, they do have a good – I was watching some commentary from abroad talking about this, and they were saying, well, you know, those Canadian workers are actually doing something, because everybody's talking about the tendency of unions to roll over, you know. But Oshawa, by going out, instead of waiting for the GM to tell them something, they went out. It's kind of we're having a little collision here between democracy and capital, aren't we?
A major collision. But, you know, we're beginning to see now the underbelly and the soft side of capitalism, which is clearly not working for workers. Mm-hmm. You know, the corporations, like keep in mind here, this is not a corporation, by the way, that's losing money. They just, for this year alone, they're reporting up to $6 billion in profits. Yeah. This is this year alone, and we're only into the third quarter.
Huh.
So this is a very, very healthy, you know, corporation that essentially is thrown workers onto the scrap heap so they can continue to maximize those profits for the shareholders. And they reckon by the end of 2020, they'll have made an additional $6 billion just by closing the plants here, the plant here in Ontario, and four plants in the United States. So this is a very calculated, callous business decision,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, that has no interest of the workers at heart whatsoever, and actually a slap in the face to the government that gave them billions of dollars and bailed them out. This company could have gone out of business, period.
Yeah, they must have a slogan.
The US government and the Ontario government, yeah. A combination of the Ontario and the federal government bailing them out.
Yeah, they must have, in the company, they must have a slogan, so long, sucker. and they just don't share that with us. They don't share their slogans. We have to do that. Now, you pointed out something also I thought very innovative. This article, by the way, Globe and Mail, Sid Ryan, please, everybody, go to Sid Ryan's Twitter account. You can find it there. But you point out other countries, you know, have dealt with these issues, and we have to look at other models. And Denmark has a way of dealing with this problem of, you know, if it's going to have to be a closure or if there's going to have to be job loss. What do they do, and why did you bring that matter up?
Well, I have family living in Denmark. Two of my brothers, when I emigrated to Canada,
you Irish, the Irish get around.
Oh, yeah, we do. We do indeed. But two of my brothers emigrated there in the mid-1970s. So, you know, and I've been to Denmark 8 or 10 times, so I'm quite familiar with the political systems that they've got in play over there. But both of my brothers have availed of this program at one time or another. So when you lose your job, whether through whether you even got fired, or whether it be a case of the plant closes down or they've got some layoffs, you have a system where you can actually get earn up to 90% of your previous salary, providing you're willing to go into a retraining program. And it's a serious retraining program. Like, they're training you for jobs that exist within the community. It's not mm-hmm. like here. I checked with the Durham Region Unemployment Help Center just to get a bit of a sense before I wrote the article of what exactly is available. Because governments in Ontario and at the federal level have basically gotten out of the business of training and retraining workers. So they've offloaded it onto 400 community organizations. So the maximum you can get out of the system right now, if you happen to lose your job, would be $10,000 worth of training.
Mm-hmm.
And up to a maximum of $25,000 if you can prove that you've got, like, mortgage payments to make, or you've got to put food on the table, and you've got, you know, various transportation costs, etc. But the maximum you can get on an annual basis is a one-time $25,000, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Of which 10,000 of it will go to training.
Uh-huh.
And they're saying that the best jobs really that they're training people for right now are truck drivers. Well, you know, with the autonomous vehicles coming in, truck driver jobs are going to disappear by the millions.
They'll be the
across
first.
North America.
They'll be the first one.
They will be the first one. So the training program I was taking, you know, the reason I raised the one in Denmark was we need to start looking beyond this disclosure in Oshawa. There's going to be a massive disruption once autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles come on the roads to begin with. And this artificial intelligence will run amok in all of our workplaces. So there'll be massive displacement of workers. And we've got to have something better than simply just a $10,000 one-shot deal of retraining. Mm-hmm. That just won't cut it anymore. So we need to start looking at the longer term. And that's why I think we ought to be looking at countries like Denmark and Finland and Norway and taking a look at the best that they've got in training, retraining programs, and start to adopt them into this country.
Yeah. It's Sid Ryan. He has a new book coming out, A Grander Vision. By the way, when is it going to be out? We've been waiting.
It's April 27th.
You've built up our appetite up for this. It wouldn't be fair to our listeners without asking you, you must be rather impressed with what's going on in France.
Well, you know, again, I made reference to this, and they actually took it out of the article that I wrote for the Globe and Mail. But I said, look, if we want to see the future, then you just take a look at what's going on in France, where workers have had it, they're losing their jobs. Here we have it's a tax on gasoline. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, look, we can't even make ends meet as it is. And putting this tax on gasoline is going to really hurt mm-hmm. in a very serious way. Mm-hmm. But it's the massive dislocation of jobs. It's all of the suburbs around Paris as well, where people are living in ghettos, basically. And particularly if persons of color or if you're immigrants or refugees,
yes.
They're just not accepted into the mainstream of French society. And the jobs just aren't there. So what happens is riots like we're seeing on the streets right now is the offshoot of the massive disruption that we're going to basically see in this country and in the United States in the not-too-distant future. Yeah. So, again, this is one of the reasons I was saying there better be a soft landing here for workers and retraining them for real jobs and not the jobs that are going to disappear down the road.
Yeah, or there may not be a soft landing for the other guys. Sid, it's great talking to you. We're very appreciative, and that is a wonderful article. And your Twitter account is really valuable, and we thank you very, very much.
Okay, it's not at all. My pleasure. Enjoy doing it. Actually, I may actually be writing more articles in the new year for the Globe and Mail. So keep it
eye on. We're going to be keep an eye on that. Thank you very much.
Okay, at all. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Bye bye. That's Sid Bye-bye. Ryan, OFL president, former OFL president. I wish he still was. We're going to take a musical break. The theme is, I think we're going to hear Hit the Road, Jack, which is my attitude towards General Motors. Anyway.